Now, a call for a department to tackle sectarianism, a dedicated government department that would be set up to specifically tackle sectarianism. Where would you start in this part of the world? It's one of the key recommendations of a new report from the Ulster University. So some serious thought has gone into this from people who would be very aware of what's happening in Northern Ireland. Or are they people who are very well-meaning? Sectarianism in Northern Ireland, a review. It was compiled by Professor Duncan Morrow alongside Sir George, along with other members of the Sir George Quigley Fund Committee. So, well-intentioned, well-meaning, or absolutely something of substance. Let me speak to commentator Barbara Werty. Barbara, good morning.
Good morning, Frank.
Barbara, I don't mean to be flippant about it, but a department for tackling sectarianism, where would you start?
Oh, I fully understand the sentiment and the push behind this report and why it's been done and why we have to look at ways to tackle sectarianism. But isn't it just heart-wrenching that in this day and age we're actually talking about an entire government department to tackle something that we had certainly hoped wouldn't be a factor in our lifetime? You know, I think, first of all, it's very sad that we're still in this position. But to say that we need a government department, whilst it may bring extra resources, the question here is commitment. And that has been the problem that we have faced, you know, in the past 20 years since Good Friday. The commitment has not been there to deliver on some of the elements of that would have, I think, moved us forward. In terms of the issue of sectarianism, you know, one of the big glaring ones that was mentioned there that you mentioned yourself, Frank, was education. You know, our kids are still being educated separately. They're still being educated in sectarian terms. There are a few places where they're able to be educated together. And, you know, we all know that education is so powerful when you're young. So to be in that place with other people who are different to yourself but the same, it's just the best education that we can ask for, and that's the best grounding we can give and foundation we can give to tackle sectarianism in the future. But as we know, Stormont had, I believe it was $6 million in funding in order to work on this issue, and they sent it back to the Treasury because they couldn't agree on how to spend it. So, you know, it's all fine and well having a government department, but if the government department is still enacting the wishes of the government or of the parties who are involved in government, then I would question whether or not the commitment is really there to make that any of these recommendations become a reality or to have any impact on our current situation.
Yeah, Barbara, do stay with me. I want to speak to Amanda Ferguson about this as well. Good morning, Amanda.
Good morning, Frank.
I can't help thinking that people around the country listening this morning would have an impression of a government that, if we had it, if it was up and running, it would be a government that encourages sectarianism as opposed to a government that would set up a department to tackle sectarianism.
Well, I don't think that we need a separate department to tackle sectarianism. I think that's it's a bit of a nonsense. I think if we can get our politicians back at Stormont, that will be a good start. I think that what we need is to educate our young people together. We need to tackle social inequality, and we need people in political parties and people in positions of influence in society to stop trying to divide people and start talking about our diversity being a strength, because there's no contradiction between being British or being Irish or being a mixture of both or whatever. You can be whatever you want to be. You can be the full extent of your own identity, fill your boots, and there's no reason for people to be scared of that, which is why it's so important to get issues around like Irish language and all that sorted out now.
I'm looking at the ideas and the suggestions as to what the Ulster University think tank have actually come up with. And one of them, and it's the old chestnut, but it's like waving the magic wand and suddenly everything will be cured if we all sing a united sports anthem at Windsor Park. Yeah. And somebody, I'm not sure who's going to write it, they want a local singer-songwriter. I couldn't help thinking of, you know, this job will go to Snow Patrol. You know, is Van Morrison going to come up with it? Or would we try again, you know, to head north and get one of our great Derry singer-songwriters to write it? But it's like, I don't know, it's like so fluffy, this, isn't it? You know, we'll have a shared anthem and suddenly everything will be fine.
I think we're all set for anthems, to be honest. I think we're set for anthems, we're set for flags, we're set for knowing who we are. You know, and also as well, like, not everybody's into football, not everybody's into rugby, not everybody's a great fan of Ireland's call. You know, I get the idea of, like, people trying to sort of push this sort of shared Northern Irish identity. And that's fair enough, but I think it can be a little bit overblown. I think that there's a lot of people here who feel 100% British, a lot of people who feel 100% Irish. There's a lot of people who are very proud of their northernness or whatever, but I think that's more divided down to, like, you know, for example, like, I would say I was from North Belfast. Like, you know, everybody from Belfast always says they're, you know, from the east, north, south or west. They're very proud of that part of it. But I think that there's too much pressure and too much push on, like, everybody has to feel Northern Irish, or everybody has to, like, get on board with this kind of, like, shared you know, identity. And there's no actual need for it. It's like, if you feel Northern Irish, that's fine, fill your boots. But, you know, there's no problem about specifically saying that you don't feel that, or you're not really that into it. And I, as I said before, like, with the amount of issues we've had over flags and anthems and things in the past, I really can't see, you know, can you imagine trying to put it together? Like, the every single word and every lyric and every interpretation of it will be, like, gone over and over again. I think we're set in that regard.
It would be some challenge. Of course, if there's anyone listening who can think of a song that maybe already exists that would be ideal as an anthem for Windsor Park, just a sports anthem generally here in Northern Ireland. And I'm just wondering, when they say sports anthem, because unfortunately Professor Duncan Morrow wasn't available to have a conversation with us on the programme this morning. We did invite him, but he's too busy. But I would love to know, when they say sports anthem, are they suggesting that maybe that would be the anthem at, say, Casement Park when it is refurbished and rebuilt, that we would all sing whatever this new song is going to be instead of Aráne Éireann? Or are we going to sing the anthem just at Windsor Park instead of God Save the Queen? Or are we going to sing both anthems? I don't know. I just despair. I do despair sometimes. But let's concentrate on the serious element of this, because it is a life and death situation. The leaders of all major churches to run an agreed programme to encourage respect for other faiths. Barbara, I'm just wondering... You know, it's the important word in there, major churches, because you couldn't have the Free Presbyterians running an agreed programme that would have a look at the Catholic faith.
You just, it's kind of like you were saying with Amanda, it's a bit fluffy and sort of quite hopeful, which is sweet in its way. But these are things that churches, with people of religion, with people of faith, they live their everyday lives reaching out to one another. So that's what the churches should have been doing already. You know, this sort of reads as a list of things that we maybe should have tried over the past few years and sort of all put together. But I think the real thing that they put, I think something really important that's picked out, and you touched on it there as well when you were speaking with Amanda, is the report makes it very clear that sectarianism isn't just about religion. You know, it's actually more about social inequality. And we see that every day, because it's two groups, two aspects of the same community fighting for scraps from the table, and each is worrying what the other is getting. And our political system perpetuates division because it requires you to designate. So you're already having to set out your flag, of which, as Amanda rightly points out, we've had enough of. So, you know, we have to look at this. This is a wider... Sectarianism isn't just about Catholic and Protestant. It's not about one side versus the other. It's about the fact that there's a lot of people in our society that don't have enough, and because they don't have enough, they feel negatively towards others who they believe are getting more than them. And it just so happens that in our community we have those two lines that it falls along against religion. So I think that in academia is very important for making us ask questions, for making us examine the world around us, because they have the time and the energy and the focus to sit and do reports and studies like this, and I'm grateful for it. But when it comes to the real world, we have to look at how people are having to live their lives every day, because that, changing that and improving that, is what in the long term will help us fight this disease that is sectarianism.
Now, sectarianism, and they do say in the report, it's a part of our historic legacy and it's off the everyday. So it is part of the legacy issue, and it spills over into today. And I suppose it's been caught up with racism has managed to catch up with it here in Northern Ireland, because we only need a few people from overseas to live among us, and we'll have a new area to direct our hatred towards. It's just a pathetic commentary, but that is the reality. So this think tank at the University of Ulster, while we may look at their suggestions as being fluffy and it's not costed either, and they've no idea what it's going to mean in terms of revenue, surely, Amanda, something does have to be done.
Yes, and certainly I'm sure there's worthy parts of the report that can be picked out of it. But with regard to religion here, like, it's often talked about that the Northern Ireland is a Christian country. I'm not actually convinced that it is. I know that there are many people of faith, and that's their right to have that, and had to have that respected as well. But for so long here, everybody has had to be put into boxes for equal opportunities for them. You have to say you're a Catholic, you have to say you're a Protestant, you have to declare as other. And I think a lot of times whenever people talk about religion, what they actually mean is identity. They're not actually talking about going to mass or going to church or being a Catholic or being a Protestant. It's about being British or about being Irish and feeling that difference. So I'm not convinced that, while church leaders do have a role to play, I think that it's wider than that and it's bigger than that, because, the church attendance is falling through the floor. It's not as if the Catholic Church has a stronghold over people regarding things like contraception or their views on marriage equality and things like that. So I'm not convinced that we're as religious as people make it out that we actually are. And I think that it's not just, touching on the idea of sectarianism within communities. And, sometimes there's a focus put that it's just a working class issue. It's not. Some of the most bigoted sectarian people I know have the greatest wealth in this place. So it's something that's top to bottom. And I think that the inequality in our society is the best way to tackle that, rather than thinking, oh, it's just something that happens on a stage. It happens everywhere. It happens in boardrooms. It happens from the people that you would least expect to be sectarian, that hold these sort of ingrained views. And I think, again, it comes down to people just have to get on board with the idea that it's okay that some of us are different. It's okay that some people are in the Orange Order. It's okay that some people like the GAA. There's too much fear put around things that are part of both of our identities and our communal identity as well.
Yeah, Barbara, Amanda makes a good point about the social standing of the bigot. Some of them are very well-to-do. I've listened to a few who would be much more well-to-do than I am, and they could give any bigot a run for their money.
Oh, yeah. You get bigots in sheep's clothing all over Northern Ireland. I have met a great number and sadly worked for some also. So, yes, as Amanda rightly points out, it's not just about what we see every day on flagposts as we're driving around on our business. This is something that we are encountering that is institutionalised in some places. But I'm happy to say that in a great number of the businesses that I've worked in Northern Ireland, and not to bore your listeners, but I've worked for a lot of different companies over the years before setting up my own business. And I have very rarely come across a difficult situation in regards to sectarianism. And I have worked in... I come from a Catholic background myself. I'm no longer of that faith, but I have worked in East Belfast and in very strong loyalist strongholds, and I've enjoyed myself and I've been made very, very welcome there. So, sectarianism isn't straightforward. It's not an easy issue to tackle. But the reality is that we all live our lives alongside one another each day. We all go into work together, and for the vast majority of cases, people work alongside each other very well, because they do what our politicians don't. They focus on what they have in common when they're in that place. So you know, they'll talk about the issues with work, or they'll know what's going on with each other's kids, and they're part of each other's lives. So, you know, I think we have to embrace that and see where we, how far we've come in that respect in the last 20 years. It's not all doom and gloom, but there is no doubt that there is still a lot of work to be done on this front.
So finally, the question, the screaming question that I'm sure many people will be asking as they're driving along or doing the ironing or, you know, playing with the kids, listening to the radio, they'll be saying, is the answer with the children? Is the answer education? I see in this report every school should operate a shared education curriculum. But is the actual only answer to correcting sectarianism in this part of the world for all children to go to school together and to have everything fully integrated within the next 20 years?
I'm not sure whether it necessarily has to be integrated in the traditional sense of, you know, I think there's only something like between 5 and 10% of schools are integrated at the moment. But certainly there is something to be said for children to be educated together, definitely. You know, if you're a young person and the first time you meet a Catholic or a Protestant is whenever you're entering the workplace or whenever you're going to university, but there's something wrong with that. Like, there definitely is, and I know so many people where that is the case. I think maybe it was different for me because I was from a so-called mixed marriage. My mum's a Catholic and my dad's a Protestant. So I was brought up with a healthy respect for everybody and all identities, and I went to a Catholic primary school and a sort of predominantly Protestant secondary school. So I got to meet the mix of people, which is why I don't get upset or offended by any manifestation of British or Irish identity, because I've been on board with that from the very start. But, you know, definitely getting kids together whenever they're young. I don't know whether it has to be in the way, like, you know, the integrated schools are doing a great job. I think there it can be something that respects people who want their kids to go to faith schools or have them educated that way. You know, that it can be combined in some way, but definitely it has to start with the young people, but it also has to start with people who've been around the block a few times and have to reset how they treat the other as such. Because until we do that, you know, nothing really is going to change. It is something that's going to keep going through generations after generation if it's not tackled from whenever kids are in nursery or wherever else. But I think that there's a way to combine educating kids together that allows people to have that sort of distinct Catholic or Protestant ethos within schools. I'm sure there's a way to do it. Like,
okay, Amanda, and final word on that. Barbara, how would you sum it up? Does it have to start with the youngest of the young and families being more outward looking, or is that pie in the sky?
I think, you know, we have the best opportunity with our young people. You know, they haven't yet got to the point of no return on these issues. You know, they may be aware of them, but we have still have the opportunity to intervene whenever kids are at that age. We have the opportunity to open up their minds and show them a world outside of perhaps the one that they're familiar with or the one that they're seeing on the TV. I like to think that the next generation are going to be the saviours of us all. But then we thought that whenever we had Good Friday. So perhaps we can just all pray that we learn from our mistakes this time. And don't put this burden on the next generation and make them live with it like we have had to.
Okay, Barbara Werty and Amanda Ferguson, thank you. A government department to tackle sectarianism. If we can only get a government department to deal with education or to deal with health or to deal with the environment or roads, that would be a step in the right direction. However, if we could have a government that was providing a cure for all ills, it may have a department to tackle sectarianism. Who would the minister of that department be? And what song would they come up with as the sports anthem that this think tank is suggesting may be part of the cure for our problems? If you have an idea of a song that already exists, this would be a song that I get a sense of it. It's for Windsor Park, but it may be for Casement Park. It's a sports anthem. They don't say a soccer anthem or a football anthem. You know, they say a sports anthem. So would it be something that the boxers would stand to if they won a medal? They wouldn't stand for the Queen, or they wouldn't stand for an Éireann na bhFhéin. What would they be standing for? This new song that's going to be written by a well-known musician. That's what they're saying. Following the introduction of Ireland's Call, consideration should be given to investment on a shared sports anthem for Northern Ireland composed by a well-known musician. That's what the report has said. Who do you think would have the qualities to write it, and what would it entail? And is there a possibility that the words in a particular song, in some song, already exist that you could stand proudly as an Irish person or a British person, neither to the Queen or to the soldier song? You're standing there proudly to this new set of words and feeling that you belong to here. If you know what those words are or which song they're in, please do let us know. Very shortly, we're going to be talking about the Jeremy Kyle show and the very sad story surrounding it at this moment in time. Bill has a point he wants to make about our programme in the first half hour. Go ahead, Bill.
Good morning, Frank. Just listen to your programme. I mean, we have our own identity in the UK. So, I mean, why should we start to change things to accommodate others from another country as such, you know? And I don't want to make this one and the other and them and us type thing. It's never going to be that way. But our idea is we drive about cars with UK registration from them. We spend the pound. Why are we not part of the UK? Why can't we represent ourselves? In general, in sportsmen, we watch golfers, we watch motorcyclists, we watch snooker players who proudly drape the Ulster flag around their shoulders and identify themselves as people from Northern Ireland, quite clearly to the rest of the world. So why do we need a big change, Frank? Why do we need this big change? I mean, we've tried for years. We've had the peace process for 25 years, and for the last number of months, we've heard the sad story of young journalists who killed. You know, what road have we gone down? Every time we seem to change, it's not just a fork in the road. It seems like a roundabout here, and we'll take another one and see if we can work it here. We'll take another one and see if we can work it here. What is wrong with what we've got?
Okay, that's the question being asked by Bill. What is wrong with what we've got? No call for any new sporting anthems, and be proud to wrap the Northern Ireland flag around your shoulders if you are a successful person. Your opinions on that are very welcome this morning. This on the back of the University of Ulster think tanked team that's come up with many suggestions on how to tackle sectarianism, one being a new sports anthem.